Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Unknown Zone. This is the talk show about the unusual. I'm your host, Dave Turco, with co-host Judy Sellens, and soon to have on psychic medium Gary McKinstry. Gary is an internationally known psychic medium and tarot reader, and he joins us every first Tuesday of the month for an hour of the unusual, and he'll be fielding your calls free online. He's a great reader, so please hang in there. We were having a little bit of trouble connecting with him today. I was saying to Judy before we went on the air, they've been very good to us lately, meaning like NSA, CIA, whoever it is that tampers with us. Could be the Russians. I know.
Yeah, there you go.
They heard me. They heard me say that, and then of course we couldn't get it. But wait a second. Let me just check. Hi, I'm just checking a 508 number. Is that Gary or?
Hello, me?
Gary's 508.
Oh, sorry.
I'm 508 too.
Yeah, I know. I see that. So I just wanted to check to see if that was Gary yet. Okay, I'll put you back on hold. Thanks for calling in and hanging there. Yeah, we got callers here. But anyway, who knows? We left a message with Gary to call into the show. Normally I Skype him in, but they're blocking us again. Oh, no.
You got to behave yourself so they won't get so angry with us.
Well, you know what I was going to talk about, other than going to the calls, was... this guy, Robert Bigelow, from Bigelow Aerospace. This is like, he's not nobody. He's a big, big wheel. He was on 60 Minutes. Do you watch 60 Minutes at all? It was on the May 28th episode. So just, last Sunday or whatever it was. And, he's into aerospace, sort of like that, the guy who's making those Tesla cars. But he said point blank, because he's building these aircraft to go out into space. And mm-hmm. So the interviewer was saying, well, do you expect to meet any ETs out there? And he said, you don't have to go there. They're right here, right under your nose. And he point blank made a statement that there is an ET presence on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, and that sort of meant with like, ooh.
Well, people have felt that way anyway, because we've always felt that the government and even, other cultures, have learned so much in a short period of time that they had to have learned it from some being or whatever that had a lot of knowledge about, we went from covered wagons to being able to shoot up into space.
Correct.
So, there was very little in between time.
And you know,
between that old covered wagon and getting in,
Oh, yeah.
Well,
because Judy and I are from New England, our New England ancestors, even in the mid 1850, were cooking on a hearth.
Mm-hmm.
My great grandmother, who was born in 1883, she lived to 95, so I knew her well. She loved modernity. She hated, because we love to talk about, all these old gadgets they had in the house, that old washboard thing and just all these gadgets, just basically trying to make their lives simpler. But they were primitive. Primitive gadgets. It was amazing. They were a little above you know, a little above caveman. When you think of caveman to 1900, not much difference. And then all of a sudden,
I think we're flying
in the stars.
1900 was a little more advanced over.
Well,
caveman,
1900 though. Was, but still 1883. When she was born, there was no electricity and there were no cars. Zip.
Yeah.
No airplanes. None of that. No submarines. No, you know, it's just a very simple, basic life. It took a long, long time to get from point A to point B. It was a big deal.
It took months.
Her father,
the country here.
Yeah, her father fought in fought in the Civil War, Connecticut something regiment or whatever, and he walked. His whole regiment walked 1,500 miles to Kentucky.
Yeah.
you know.
Get around. I mean, if they didn't have horses or a way that way, then they, you know.
Right.
My grandfather rode a horse, and his brother, the two of them, rode horses from Halifax, Nova Scotia, to New Mexico. That's how they got down there. They had no money, so they would stop and they would play their guitars and sing at night to different places, and they'd give them either a meal or whatever and get them back on. It's a good thing they didn't have to buy gas. They could get on their horses and ride off again, and then when they'd get so far, they would dig out their guitars again, and that's how they crossed the country.
And one of the interesting things is, and Judy and I bring this up quite often, is we have done so many different topics over the years. We've started to see what seems to be unrelated to be very related topics. So then you have these world wars, right? Especially World War II. World War II is really a huge turning point on the planet. Of course, it also coincides with Roswell, which is a story that never stops growing to this day. It's absolutely amazing when you actually delve into that whole story. But anyhow, the Nazis, the Germans were actually head of America and Britain, et cetera, the Allies, technologically at the beginning of the war. And what they also were doing was using psychics to contact non-human beings, call them aliens, and that's where they were getting their best technology from. That's well documented. And of course, the U.S. started to use psychics as well. That is like poo-pooed, and people try to pretend it's not happening. There was a Project Stargate where they did the remote viewing. That apparently actually started much earlier than previously thought, maybe not under the name Stargate, but that became famous under Ingo Swann and McMonagle. Some of these other people that were doing these remote viewing things have come forward years later. That project was never shut down. They claim that it was, but they still use psychics today. Our friends, the Russians, use psychics. All of these people do that. And it's not just to, you know, read somebody's mind. They do make contact with other beings, non-physical beings, physical beings, but not from this planet, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, all sorts of things. And that's why the Nazis spent so much time in Antarctica, which is a whole other story that is largely covered up. And, you know, if you dig deep enough,
well,
you find
been a
out
a lot lately that's come out on Antarctica.
You got
even
it.
As far as the mothership that's under the ice down there.
These holes, most people don't realize there's a no-fly zone over a large area of Antarctica. Now, why would that be? There's just nothing but ice, supposedly, but that's not the case at all. There's a lot of stuff going on down there, and that all stems from when the Nazis had gone down there and built bases, brought tens of thousands of people there. You know, it's really an extraordinary story, and it all ties in. And that's when post-World War II is when we start to make these huge advances during World War II and post-World War II. And both the East and West were using alien technology. And, of course, we have the downed alien technology. Apparently, there people are now coming forward, you know, on their deathbeds as people near the end of their lives that had to do with Roswell, either directly or sort of tangentially, you know, bringing craft into, say, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base or whatever. People are sworn to secrecy. You're not going to talk. Your livelihood depends on it. Your family depends on it. You're not going to talk. They don't do that. And at the end of their lives, they're like, okay, this is what really happened. And so this information gets out. I mean, it's kind of old news now, in my opinion, but, oh, yeah, there's all sorts of stuff there. So anyway, that's what I was going to bring up. I'm going to try to get Gary on. So, folks, you're going to listen to what we normally do off the air and see what happens. This is so unlike Gary, because otherwise he just calls in. Because I know I left a message on the machine, too. So hopefully, you know, nothing's untowards happened to Gary or his family. What did Little Tomlin say? One ringy dingy? Two ringy
dingy? One ringy dingy.
You guys can't hear the ringy dingies, but... Please, Gary. Crazy. Call failed. Holy goodness.
Failed?
Yeah, that's never happened before.
Hello, you
good.
McKinstry. Gary and I are in session and assisting other clients at this time. If you are traveling and cannot find us, please pull over and stop. Try calling again and leave a message, and I will call you right back. Thank you.
She's so great.
All other clients, please see our website, GaryMcKinstry.com, for upcoming events and availability. Leave your name and number, and I'll call you back as soon as possible. Thank you so much, and have a great day. Bye-bye now.
Hi, Virginia and Gary. We're not pulling over, but we are lost. And we're trying to reach Gary for the show today. Yeah. Hopefully everything's great. And he can call into the show at 347-637-2956, because we're having some weird trouble of trying to connect with you guys. So that would be great. Hopefully you can call in soon. Don't know what's happening. Bye-bye.
Well,
what was
so
weird about that
one ringy dingy?
Okay, but here we go. As mundane and boring as this is, it's comical. So what I do the studio switchboard, which is actually fairly sophisticated. I see all sorts of things. I see people's names. I see their numbers. I see, it's like I'm a little NSA agent here. I know how long you've been on hold. I know all sorts of things. And I control the audio clips. I have all this information on there. And with Skype, it shows me an icon of the phone ringing. I hear it ringing. I can see who I'm calling, who's on hold, who I've got, everything. When something is live, it's lit up. When it goes dead, it said right there, it went whoop, dead, it stopped ringing, and it said call failed. Then all of a sudden, the message machine comes on.
Her voice came on, yeah.
Okay. When I left a message before, that didn't happen. So something's kaflooey here. Oh, please let us on. We've been so good. Well, you know,
we haven't done any bad shows in a long time, at least a month.
I know, and this is the thing.
The least they could do is give us a break.
Yeah, I know. And unfortunately, this is one of the days where we have a lot of callers. I just saw another caller come in. We're still waiting for Gary to call in, so please hang in there just a little bit longer, and hopefully we'll be able to have Gary, because he's so worth it. He's such a great guy, and he's a brilliant psychic. He's been doing this for so long. And for folks that don't know him personally, we do. Some people, especially, there have been famous ones on TV, and I have to give the amazing Randy credit for trying to debunk them, because they did deserve to be debunked. And Gary actually knows people in show business, and they call him, and they go, and people in the, let's say, the illusory arts, people who do illusions like in Las Vegas, and they said to him, What? Show me your tricks. How do you do this? Because I don't have any tricks. Because this is real. I'm actually doing it. I actually do hear dead people. I actually do see dead people. And I can tell you from him taking me through a regression, he saw exactly what I was seeing. Okay, that's freaky. But he can do it. He can do it. Pardon me. But no, we've been good. But one of the things that I like to say is why our show is legit. We have done so much research, and we try to bring the truth as we can possibly piece it together out there. And they don't like it because, unfortunately, humanity is under attack constantly. Things that, and you know what, Judy, seems to be more, what it's just like in the old days. You couldn't criticize, say, the king or the queen. I don't know about the president, but a lot of nursery rhymes and stuff like that, kids' stories, like the emperor has no clothes. They all came from Europe because it's the only way to get the truth out there. Our leader's a loser. You know, so they have this kid.
Well, they did that even with religions and stuff.
Sure they did, exactly.
They made
otherwise,
up poems and stuff so that, mm-hmm. you know, that churches could actually recite the poems or sing a song to it. And then the people would kind of know themselves what it stood for, like the 12 days of Christmas and all that. It doesn't mean anything about the tree or any of that stuff. It's the story of the birth of Christ. Stand it. But see, back then, it had to be the king's religion.
Right.
And a lot of these people were still Catholic. But if they tried to, you know, if they tried to even be a Catholic, then they were punished for it.
Correct.
And so they had to do everything in secrecy. They had to meet in people's houses in secrecy and do whatever they could do to, you know, follow their own religion. So
right.
There was a whole lot of that stuff going on.
Yeah.
And God forbid you talked about the king or anything, they'd come get you.
Right. That was Europe. That, of course, that's changed. But in large parts of the world, that still is, whether it's like a place like China, this is not to talk against anybody,
in places with dictators and stuff.
Right, where they don't have a religion. I know because I knew somebody in the Falun Gong movement. Their leader was imprisoned, and that's it. You're out of here, and you cannot practice. They considered a threat to the state. And then you have other areas where it's either dictatorial or there's a particular reason, religion, and I will pick on Saudi Arabia. This is not the regular people, but the House of Saud. They're cruel dictators. And as I pointed out, not only are there no Catholic churches, there are no Christian churches, there are no Jewish temples, there are no Hindu temples, there are no Buddhist temples. No other religion is allowed. And a lot of people don't seem to know that. That's the world today. Some people are born into that. They don't have the freedoms that we have. So that kind of is gone by the wayside. But here in the West, we still have a lot of control, you know, that the governments do. And as Judy and I can testify from what's happened to us personally, we've shared a little bit. It's absolutely chilling. And that's when we back off completely and talk about your aura. But in any case, and then usually
the
they let us.
You know, instead of saying some of the things. I mean, you know, when people are going in David's house and shutting his telephone off and putting little bugs in it.
Oh, yeah.
And things like that. You know, that gets to be serious.
It's
serious.
Totally serious. This little show, you know, that's why I always tell people when they see some of these alternative shows that become really, really big,
mm-hmm.
I'm not saying don't trust them, but keep your eye on them, question everything that they say. And I always say question everything we say too, because they don't let you get big. They don't let the truth get. That's why I wanted to talk to Gary about the 60 Minutes episode. They know exactly what this guy's going to say. you don't go on 60 Minutes without them knowing. They go over everything ahead of time. They know exactly what you're going to say, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So obviously they wanted to have an important, quote unquote, important person like Robert Bigelow of Bigelow Aerospace say that, hey, there's an ET presence on Earth. It's not even a question about could there be somewhere in the universe intelligent life or life at all. And we've gotten a little bit past that. And he said point blank, no, they're here on Earth. There's a presence, ET presence on Earth, and there's been one. That's pretty huge. So that to me is a nod that they're saying, okay, let's go. But I was going to say, instead of having comic books or children's books to get some of the truths out, we've reverted more to things like sci-fi or fantasy. But those shows actually are closer to the truth. And like I say, I'm telling you, because I live it personally. Judy and I also tend to experience lots of things. Unfortunately for me, I've experienced the so-called grays, different aliens as well. Those are real. I'm not imagining it. I am a scientist. I'm a chemical engineer. I have a lot of training. I have a very scientific mind. I am rational, and I question everything. However, I know what it's like to be in the grips, unable to move, and having these hideous gray things, boop, 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 and they communicate directly with your brain, and it's incredibly clear and loud. You can't miss it. It's a clearer communication than anything we can even do. It's quite extraordinary, but you don't have much control in the situation. Anyhow, Doctor Who, my favorite all-time show, I'm telling you, it's one of my fears they talk about all the time, which is basically to have, it's one thing to have like a dictator crushing you. At least you know a dictator is crushing you. It's another to have unseen influences affecting us without our knowledge. And that's one of the things that's actually going on the planet. And you could call it extraterrestrial, but because it's not 3D here on Earth, but there are influences. And the thing is, again, it's what Judy and I have found. All of our research always points back to the Bible being true. And in the Bible, if you notice, that's what, you know, when Christ came, and even in the Old Testament too, it's all about spirits and how, you know, people's behavior that was really whacked. It was because they
all about beings that came out of the sky in these round, what they used to call wheels, because of course you're talking about thousands of years ago. They never saw anything that flew. So when they look up into the sky and they see these round wheels with flashing lights and smoke coming out of them, that wouldn't be, you know, a wheel, but it could very well be, you know, a UFO. And then the beings that would be able, they could come out of this spacecraft or, you know, from wherever they thought it came from. The beings could come out, come down, and walk among humans here on Earth and go back up. And even back then, right. I mean, they were interbreeding with human females.
Correct. It's right in the Old Testament, right there.
Right. All that stuff is in the Bible. If you study it and look at it, it's all there. It's all explaining how these beings, you know,
and I also think,
I mean, they don't look like some sort of ogres or something, but yeah, and even you look at the Egyptians, you look at what those people put on their inside the pyramids and everything, and all the drawings, and you look at the beasts that they had in there.
Hey, I got to tell you this. Yeah, because just to finish that point, you know, you're absolutely right. I haven't been to Egypt, but I've been to the British Museum several times, and they have a lot of hieroglyphic stuff from the pyramids over there.
Mm-hmm.
You can see these people can very precisely carve, or I don't see how it was carving. I think these things were done with like a stamp because they're too perfect. But anyway, they're extremely accurate. You can see exactly what it is. So if they wanted to show somebody, they wouldn't have a distorted head on them like some of them had. And you can see these giants that look sort of Egyptian, but with the elongated head, and then having humans, you can see they're not children, they're adults, in their lap. They look tiny, but they have normal heads. They have normal heads. So somehow, for a while, they had these leaders that were not human, or at least not wholly human. But the other thing was, you know, on shows like Ancient Aliens and others, they'll quite often show those pictographs from the desert Southwest, right? The Indians and those kind of funny beings that are, you know, the Indians carved into the rock face all those years ago. Broke that out. No, what I do now, since I almost died from my regular job, I work at my sister's print shop, and we do photo and printing. And we get photos from all over the world, anyhow, and all over the country, because so few people are actually still processing old film cameras. You know, everybody uses digital with an iPhone or whatever, right? But anyway, we still develop film. And somebody had some old film, and they wanted it developed. And it was when they had a trip to the desert Southwest, and they took all those pictures, Judy. And in real life, oh, my God, did you know how big those pictographs actually are? Because, you know, sometimes those ones that, you know, those they're clearly aliens. It's unmistakable. So I hear them developing these things, and like, oh, my God, it's those aliens on the that you always see on TV. On those, but they just show, like, a little detail of it. The real pictures are way bigger than a human figure. They're bigger than 6 feet. These things are gigantic. You know, picture a big rock face, and I don't know, 15 feet maybe, 20 feet tall, you know, and they're all in a row, and you can just see, oh, that's a horse. If they wanted to draw a person, they could. These things are aliens.
Yeah.
And it wasn't done yesterday. These things were done a long time ago, before there was TV, before there were comic books, before there was fantasy, before any of this stuff.
Well, the thing of it is, too, it wasn't just done in one area. All across the world,
correct,
where human beings lived, they had the same figures drawn. We just talked last week on the dog men.
Yep.
And dog men were like humanoid bodies, but they had heads like dogs. They still exist around us, whether they're coming from a portal or whatever, but they're still around us. But they saw them back then too, and you know, they put them, you know, in their tombs and everything. I mean, they had figures of them made up, and they painted them on the walls. So, I mean,
right.
If they could draw,
that's right.
If they could draw a horse, and they could draw, you know, they could draw a wild cat or oxen or any of this stuff and put it on the wall, and then all of a sudden they come up with a dog man,
right?
You know, so I mean, they didn't have to; they could just draw a dog, but they didn't.
Correct. All right.
So,
and,
yeah, I mean, you see that all over the world. It's all over in so many different cultures, and the same creatures, the same
right.
beings.
Well, it's just like with Anubis over in Egypt.
Yeah.
He is, they call it the jackal, but, you know, a jackal is a dog, a wild dog. That's what they drew. I mean, it's unmistakable. He was this Egyptian god. And he was depicted as a canine man or canid man or a man with a canine head, however you want to express that. Why would they do that? You know, but there was reputedly, and this isn't that long ago, you know, 1,500 years ago, I believe, would be the most recent, when the Greeks were a little bit more prominent than they are today. And in traveling throughout the East and the Middle East as well, and then bringing back information to Greece, and they report it. And at that time, the Greeks probably had the highest education levels on the planet. And they reported in different areas, parts of India, I believe parts of China, and in Africa, there were these tribes, not like one like story of people whispering about a dog-headed person. They actually saw these people. They described exactly what they looked like, the sounds that they made, what they ate, the whole nine yards.
Well, they're talking about those kinds of beings right here in this country.
Correct.
That are running around, and they're living in more or less like groups.
Right, but
which is very common to do when it comes down to canines.
Correct, but that's right.
Yeah,
but
because they live in groups.
But back then, I just want to say that, now it's just on the fringes that we get to talk about this stuff. But back then, and I don't have the names of the Greek, I'll call them like travel writers of the day, but they were more than that. They were polymaths. So they were historians, archaeologists, whatever, and anthropologists, if you will, of the day. And the locals knew about them. It was accepted. They were actually like living, oh, yeah, this is where those people live, and this is what they do, and oh, yeah, watch out for them. And everything else that they talked about, they were able to describe in their travels what other people's belief systems, other people's languages, what they wore, what they looked like, how they were depicted extremely accurately. And at the same time, what they were just making this up about dog men, no, they weren't. They existed. Just like we know, and most people don't know this, listen to our shows, they're all archived here that we've done on Blog Talk Radio. When we've talked about giants, not only is it in the Bible, but it was also in the New York Times and the Smithsonian in the 1800s. But try to get those copies of those today. You can't get them. But, of course, you know, some people had them. And you can see they had pictures of archaeologists from Yale University and other major universities standing next to human femur bones that were, like, as long as they were, that they had dug up from the mounds in the Midwest, those what we thought were Indian burial sites. And they really weren't. They weren't actually Indians because the Indians said they weren't us. They were the Native American Indians, I'm collectively just calling them Indians, lived with or simultaneously with giants. And they were the ones who were the mound builders. And
several of them had chiefs that were giants, and they actually thought of these giants as like God.
Right. They were apparently more advanced. And in some places, the only part of society they had were their leaders. Like Tallahassee was a giant. Look it up.
Mm-hmm.
The Spaniards, for instance, who documented this, they documented these Native American tribes, who they were, what their names were, what they spoke, where they lived, et cetera, et cetera. And what, you think they just made up the fact that their leader was a giant? No. But this was the case. It's really extraordinary stuff. And, you know, all of these things just relate to the same sorts of things about there's so much more to our world than what meets the eye and what the government holds is true. And it seems like whenever we start to talk about this sort of stuff, they sort of fiddle with our show. I was going to say, God, it's been a long time, Judy, since we haven't been able to get.
Yeah.
So disappointing. Mm-hmm.
We have to go back and talk. I mean, I don't think that's nothing that you can't look up on the internet, and there's nothing that we've talked about that you can't research. So why do they make such a big deal out of it?
Well, this is the thing. And this is the thing. And again, just because it's on the internet doesn't necessarily mean it's true. Just do your research and do your logic, and eventually you start to because I'll be the first to say, is it truth with a capital T? No, because even I have experienced, because it's beyond the realm of the physical, it's taken me a long, 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 long time to piece it together and start to understand it. My understanding has changed over time because this is one of the things. What we are as a being, this gets back down to talk about core truths. Well, we're in our physical bodies. We definitely relate to a physical body. You know, we went and had dreams. Oh, I was having one of my dreams last night about, I've always had dreams my whole life about lions and getting eaten by, eaten or attacked by lions. Well, anyway, that was one of them. So anyhow, but it seems perfectly real when it's happening in my dreams, very physical. And the thing is, I've had conscious out-of-body experiences. I feel like I'm in my body. So I was reading this thing on Linda Moulton Howe's Earth Files, which I highly recommend her website. It doesn't mean everything on her show is truth. Some people may be making stuff up. Some people may be inaccurately saying things. Some people may be lying. But in the main, it's true. So this person was telling the story about, you know, this ET contact and how he woke up. This was a military man, and he was being pulled through a wall. Okay, now as scary as that sounds and as insane as that sounds, straight out of, you know, The Twilight Zone, one of my favorite episodes, when that kid fell out of bed and rolled through the wall, is because it actually happens. But the thing is, if the person could actually see or be aware of it, his physical body, his 3D physical body, would still have been in bed. What happens is we have more than one body, and the ancient yogis talk about this. You know, your astral body, your spirit body, your soul, all these sorts of things. But when you're associated with that, when your consciousness is aligned with that body, it feels exactly like your physical body. So you think you're in your physical body, but you're actually not. You're just your consciousness at that time. And that's the body that the aliens actually abduct. Although some people apparently this physical things. I mean, I ended up with, as you know, oh, did I tell you this, Judy? I don't know if I got to tell you this one. So I have had, I had that implant in my right hand after one of my encounters, and I pulled it out like the psychopath I am. So anyhow, I got rid of that one. I'm like, they're not tracking me. Anyhow, so I go to Chicago for my nephew's graduation, right? The weird thing is I have good karma when it comes to traveling, as much as I hate flying. I have never had to go through security. Or if I go through security, they just let me go. I've never had to go through pat down. I've never had to go through the X-ray machine thing. Nothing. I never had to take my belt off. I never had to take my shoes off. They look at me for some reason and just, oh, come through. It's so weird. So the thing was, same thing. So I still hadn't gone through it. But then on my way back from Chicago, for some reason, there was nobody there. Actually, this is a Chicago midway. Nobody was telling you to do anything. So I thought to myself, you know what? I'm just going to get in the line that everybody else gets in. But I had this feeling I could have just walked through and nobody would have done anything. So you take off your shoes, you put it in a, you know, take your wallet out, you put it in this little conveyor belt thing, off it goes.
Yeah, you practically have to strip down to your skivvies to get on a plane.
Never, ever, even going abroad, I didn't have to do it. Coming back, didn't have to do it. All right, so I do it this time. And you get into this bizarre little booth thing where you have your hands up and you're doing the little X-ray thing. So I had never done it before, as I said. So I just watched the people ahead of me, kind of like a little monkey trying to figure out, okay, what do they do? I'm just going to copy it, right? So I just see the thing like swish around me. And I'm like, okay, I guess this is done. And I start to walk out. The guy starts yelling at me. The TSA guy, he was not friendly. I thought, oh, God, no. I didn't tell you you could come out. You didn't tell anybody they could come out. I heard. So then he's like, you're not. So then I was standing. They have these fake yellow feet you stand on, right? I'm like, my feet are on them, right on them. No, put the toes where you, whatever. So I'm like, okay, I am. You know, it was crazy. Then he was telling me that I was moving too much. I was not moving. I was not moving. I could definitely tell if I'm moving or not. So anyhow, so I'm there. I see this thing swishing around me, like I'm in a, you know, CAT scan or something. What the heck? So eventually he finally says, okay, you can come out now. He stops me. You have metal in your back. He turns me around and points to this thing right in the center of my back. Okay. I'm like, oh no, this is how Whitley Strieber Streber found out he had an implant in his ear, was going through one of these metal detectors. I'm like, God, no. I've never had an I've had operations, but not in my back.
It'd be a little bit hard for you to reach around there and pull it out.
Yeah, this one I couldn't get myself. So the aliens knew I pulled the other one out, apparently. And I'm like, oh, God, no. So he goes, so all he did was pat me down. And he's like, You know, but he showed it to me on the thing. And then he just let me through.
What did it look like on the scan?
The thing was, it was a rectangle. So I don't know what it is. In my brain, I'm like, at that point, I just wanted to get on the plane. I was like, in denial, like, that can't be. I don't have anything. I have no metal in my back. I've never had any, I've never had back surgery. This is crazy. But I mean, so people have said, oh, it was just an error. It was an artifact. They made me do it twice, and clearly I knew something was wrong. But all those people before me just whizzed right through. So I don't know. And by the way, yeah, I only had one shirt on. They make you take off everything except like one layer.
It used to be, remember, they could see right through your clothes.
I'm sure they saw
it. No privacy of walking in there because.
Oh, no, they could see everything.
Yeah, they see everything.
Yeah, I don't care. And
like, geez, how tacky.
I know. But anyhow, yeah, so that's another chapter of mine.
Oh, well.
Unbelievable.
One never knows with you around what's going to happen next.
See, this is the part that I can't figure out, but the part that when they're floating you through the wall or through the window, that's not actually a physical body. See, I learned that from Terrence McKenna. He did all those books on DMT and LSD and all that sort of stuff. And so he got the approval to actually do these experiments. I think it was at the University of New Mexico State. It was, or University of New Mexico, one of the two. So he was not only there and had his, like, you know, grad students there, but he had videos, you know, cameras on the people. So when they were taking their DMT trips, quote unquote, that's like the molecule that he called it, the spirit molecule, the same thing you get from ayahuasca. When these people take their journeys, anyhow, people report, as he said, about a third of people eventually reported being abducted by aliens and being on a UFO, an actual structured craft, and being, you know, on a gurney type thing or whatever, and being fiddled with or operated on, right? And he's like, okay, you were here the whole time and I can prove it to you. Okay, the physical body was there, but their subtle body, you know, like your dream body, your astral body, your soul, whatever, they were somehow at that level, were manipulating, and they were on some sort of craft or whatever. But what doesn't make sense to me is how that can happen. The implant actually does go into the physical body too.
Yeah.
I don't know. They have really advanced technology. That's all I can say. They're not more advanced than we are as a soul. I can tell you that right now. They are endlessly fascinated. I think one of the reasons with me, Carrie O'Connor, the great psychic, said that it was something to do with my DNA and that I'm the type of person that does create these little portals myself. Okay, that's all true. But I think it's my ability. I'm extremely emotional, and I feel everything. And the thing that in my interactions with these great aliens, especially the Greys, they have zero ability to emote. They're the coldest, soulless type of thing.
Listen, people that's actually thought maybe they were some sort of robotic or android type beings that worked with the other ones.
The little ones are. And I agree with that assessment 100%. The little ones are some form of an android. I can tell that they're not really alive. And also the way they're treated by the tall, skinny ones. Mm-hmm. The taller ones are definitely animated. They're alive. the one that calls himself a scientist to me, or the professor, depending. But it's the same dude that's been there my whole life. There's more animation to him. There is a tiny level of emotion to him, but it's so little. And I just think they're fascinated with my super reactive.
Well, doesn't that kind of go to Spock? He was supposed to be emotionless, remember?
There you go. Just like in the modern day one, Data. Yeah,
he was alive. He was just he had no real emotion.
But yeah. Hmm. Exactly. See, there you go again. In sci-fi, they are able to show something that's actually closer to reality.
Mm-hmm.
Because I've experienced it. All of these things, like I say, so many Doctor Who episodes I've actually experienced. Gene Roddenberry said, the guy who was the creator of Star Trek, he got his inspiration. He'd be sleeping. He'd wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and he had the episode. That's how he did it. He didn't sit there toiling away during the day. He got inspired. Boom. He got the idea and out it comes. And it's very much what people actually experience. A lot of the stuff is actually accurate.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. Absolutely amazing. Anyhow.
Well, makes it interesting, that's for sure.
Sure,
there's still a lot of that stuff going on, even though they don't come out with it, talk about it that much. It's still going on, all that. You know, there's still UFOs going around. There are still... But, you know, for what I've always felt was that most of the UFOs were earthly. They were earthly beings that were coming from that. But
not human. Or do you mean human?
Not human, but they were earthly.
Correct.
And, you know, when we lived in the West, those things were seen a lot, but we lived in the desert. And when you're living in the desert, I mean, you can just stand on your front lawn and see for miles. Because it's so flat, and there aren't a lot of trees. Or if you need trees in your yard, you better go find a place and plant them in your yard because they're just not going to grow. It's all sand and stuff. But when we lived in Blackfoot, which was a town about the size of this one, and my mother was out hanging clothes, and right over the garage in the back of the house, it was a long garage. And right over the back of that garage, she looked up and there was a disc with flashing lights going around on it. And she said it just hovered there. And all of a sudden, she said there were like little puffs of smoke or something come out of it. And it just poof, and it was gone.
Oh, weird.
And she said, oh, you know, she wasn't going to say anything to anybody because people are going to think she's crazy.
What
and
year was
night,
this? Roughly.
Oh, it would be in the 1950s, probably.
Okay.
And when we got the evening paper, right on the front page was a picture of it and about 100 different people who had seen it. And said the same thing as my mother had said that.
Who got the picture of it?
Somebody, I don't know, somebody was out in the back and it had been around, evidently it had gone like past our place and gone probably across town or something. And all these people saw it.
All right, do you remember seeing the picture? Do you remember seeing
it? I don't remember. No, because it was on the front page, the picture of it, and stating that it looked like a flying saucer. Of course, that's what they called them back then, and that it had been seen by at least 100 people. And my mother said, I wasn't going to say a thing to anybody, but that's what I saw. And my mother was very logical and she never believed in any of that stuff. And she says, after that, I believed in it. She said, it wasn't small. It was big. And she says, I could just look. She says, it was quiet. I didn't even know it was there. And I look up from the clothesline and there's this thing just hovering out over the back of that garage. It was behind the garage a bit, I guess, and just hovering there in the air. And then she said all of a sudden it just took off. And she said it was just gone. And she'd never seen anything move that fast. And she went running and got in the house. It was like, well, that's a little late to go in the house after even standing there staring at it for a while. I mean, you know. But she saw it for quite a few minutes before it took off. And then it went across the town. And when it was going across the town, people saw it. And somebody had a camera and took a shot of it and got a good picture of it. But my mother spotted it on the front page and said, that's exactly what I saw. And, of course, my father said, you know, if it had been anybody else, I wouldn't have believed him. But being your mother, I believe that she saw this thing.
I went on.
She was just so logical.
Yeah, I just went on, just typed in Blackfoot, Idaho, UFO, and up comes this website. It's not your UFO sighting, but UFO Hunters, not to do with the TV show. It's one of these report. 176,524 sightings reported and growing. Anyway, here's one from May 4th, 2017 from Blackfoot. And it's cool because it shows a map of that area. So you were just north of Pocatello, right?
Yep.
Blackfoot. And what's so cool is they show the map and they stick a UFO over the area. But gosh, what's interesting, well, obviously this is where the towns are, right? So along, was that 26? Route 20? No, 86, I guess. Whatever that, what is that? I can't get that UFO off that road to see what, anyway. Interesting. How many UFO sightings there are in that area? And this is
well,
just,
there's also a lot, if you look at, probably out towards Territon.
Where's
which
that?
Territon. And that's in Idaho. That's the other side of Rexburg and Idaho Falls. But it's in the desert. And there were a lot of different sightings out there, different things.
You were actually not far from Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
You're on that side. Craters of the Moon National Monument Preserved.
Yeah, we were 2 hours away from Craters of the Moon.
Wow. So you've been living this kind of...
And there's been a lot of reports around that, too. There were a lot of reports.
Yeah, there are a lot of videos. People hear a whole bunch of videos. Really, gosh. Well,
yeah.
Like you say, it's big sky country up there, unlike here where we live in a forest. But I've seen tons of UFOs here, so.
Well, it's like when you're living in the middle of the desert. You don't have anything to block your view. All it is sky.
Right.
And so you go out in the evening and you can just sit there. But a lot of these things were seen in the broad daylight.
Yeah, my youngest brother saw a UFO. He lived in the West. And when they moved back east, he drove the cars across country. So he had to do it twice.
Mm-hmm.
And each time he said, but it was Montana, I believe, he was driving across. And both times he saw a UFO. And you know, it's one thing to just see something in the sky, like a light or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But this was, he said he could actually see it was a triangle. And it was hovering. And then it just basically zipped across the horizon in like 1 second, which would be, I don't know how many hundreds of miles. Cause
yeah,
like you say,
and we didn't have anything
like
back at that time that moved as fast as that.
Oh, we don't have
we
anything.
Never had anything.
We don't have anything now that can actually move that fast.
No.
And one time he and that was when they lived on the West Coast, he and his wife both, so at the same time, something zip across the sky and then just stop. You know, like, and literally, like, zip across the sky. Not like a satellite or a plane, you know, how it, even a jet plane, as fast as it's actually going, it's just, it's a gradual progression. No, this is from point A to B. Is like if you did it with your finger, boom, and just did it that fast, and then just come to a complete stop, we don't have anything that can do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember one night when we were coming home, and I can't remember where we'd been, whether it was Idaho Falls, but we were coming home, and my mother was again driving. My father was not with us. And I remember that there was something in the sky, and my mother picked it up immediately. And she says, look at that thing. And so we were looking out the window at this object. It wasn't round. It was oddly shaped. And it was just sort of sitting out there. And as we were driving through the middle of this desert land, I mean, it's just one big, long, straight highway. And as we're going along that thing kept right up with us. And it stayed to the right side of the car, and it just stayed there. And my mother was getting really nervous. She says, she didn't know where to go or what to do. And she figured the only thing I can do is just floor it and keep going straight ahead. But that thing stayed right with us. And you know, you got to realize the speed going through the desert is legally 75 miles an hour. And my mother was going over the speed limit because most people going through the desert go at about 100 miles an hour coming through. But this thing was keeping right up with us. And then all of a sudden, it made a few weird, like, turns, and it just took off across the road and went out the other way, and it was gone. But, I mean, these things were very common to see these things out there in the West. And my mother always used to say, oh, it's just the guys at the site that, you know, they're just making things and testing them out and stuff. Because she didn't want us to be scared. Because I was always looking at movies, you know, of these UFOs and all these different. Oh, back then there was a ton of those movies. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified by one of the movies because it reminded me so much of being in the desert and the sinking feeling. And I used to get that feeling every time we'd go through a certain part of that desert. I would feel like everything was sinking, and we were, as fast as we were going, we were sinking down into the sand. I just, you know, it was an eerie spot, but you know that's where they had that nuclear accident too. That was the very first near Arco. That was the very first nuclear meltdown in this mm-hmm. country. Killed 3 people. So, yeah. My father used to say, kind of wondered if those things were hanging around to see what they were creating out there. Because they had such a huge, long runway to carry this atomic plane. But it was an interesting place to live. Anyway, I guess we're not getting Gary today, so we have to apologize to all the people. But we'll have him on again, so
we sure will.
We can just hope everyone has a great day and great week coming up, and then we'll be back. And we'll discuss something else and try to keep it nice so that they'll leave us alone.
Righto.
Maybe.
Thanks so much, Judy.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And you've been listening to The Unknown Zone with Judy Sons and Dave Turco. And sorry about that. Gary McKinstry wasn't on today. Have no idea what happened. But we'll soon find out. And we'll see you again next week for another episode of The Unusual.